Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Your Ben Jarofsky Show for this Friday, February 16th, starts now. Today on the show, it's Oh What a Week, so you know what that means. Ben talks the top stories in local, national, and international news with a very special guest this week, none other. You know him, you love him, comedian, entertainer, Pat Whalen. The Ben Jarofsky Show, a presentation of the Chicago Reader. ChicagoReader.com for everything there is to know in the city of Chicago. If you want to know what to do, where to go, what to eat, what to drink, what's happening in local politics in the city of Chicago, you want to stay updated on local government, you want to know what's happening in the arts, in music in the city, so much more, all at ChicagoReader.com. And if you want more Ben Jarofsky, head to ChicagoReader.com/Jarofsky. That's J-O-R-A-V as in victory, S-K-Y.
Hello again, everybody. Ben Jarofsky here. We're calling this Who Runs Chicago Friday, and here's why. Actually, it's Oh What a Week, and Patrick J. Whalen, there's no J in that name, Patrick Whalen, is my guest. I keep saying Patrick J. Whalen, and my people out there, wait a minute, where's the J, Ben?
J is in Jarofsky.
Oh, yeah, we established that. it's so funny, the concept of Pat Whalen's mom in Buffalo, way back when and whenever, and I don't know, whenever Pat's a millennial, was born, goes, let's call him middle name Jarofsky for some completely obscure left wing.
Flipped open the reader, pointed at the page and said, this is his middle name.
Let's call him Jarofsky. It's like a boy named Sue, one of the greatest songs ever written. Everywhere he went, he was Patrick Jarofsky Whalen. Oh my God. By the way, are you a fan of a boy named Sue, Pat?
Oh yeah. I love Sue. Sue's great. Great guy.
Guess he's never heard the song. Yeah, it's a baby.
You ever see Walk the Line?
Have I ever seen Walk the Line?
With Joaquin Phoenix.
No, I've never seen Walk the Line.
Pretty good. He did a really good impression. Really good.
Wow. That was a great transition by young Patrick. Yes, I've seen that movie. He does a great impression of Johnny Cash. So you showed the world very subtly that, yes, he did know a boy named Sue, even though he wasn't around when it came out. So let me ask you this question as we move on to where I was going. Who wrote A Boy Named Sue?
Jackson Brown.
He couldn't write A Boy Named Sue in a million years. He doesn't.
He wrote for the Eagles. What are you talking about?
But Boy Named Sue is like poetry. It's irony. It's philosophy. It's humor. It has a life lesson that's embedded in a song that's winking at you. And it was written by one of the greatest poets to ever come out of the city of Chicago. Moment of rest in peace, acknowledgement for the great Shel Silverstein. That's who wrote A Boy Named Sue.
And I learned something here today.
And you'll learn one more thing. As Patrick Whalen can tell you, Shel Silverstein graduated from Roosevelt High School. So there you go, in Albany Park, right down the street.
Because everyone knows Roosevelt High School, that's where the sidewalk ends. So that's where that came from.
Oh, he'll be at Zadie's tonight, too. So the reason I began with Who Runs Chicago, even though this is really Oh What a Week with Patrick Joseph Whalen, is that Pat sent me the cover shot of the latest Chicago magazine, which is not out yet, which has a split image, a split screen, if you will, split cover. On one side is Mayor Brandon Johnson, and on the other side is Governor J.B. Pritzker. Interestingly, we're going to take the deep dive, X-Files, like, ooh, on the cover. I believe Brandon Johnson is on the left and JB is on the right. Whoa. You know those guys at Chicago Magic?
Graphic design.
Well, they're smoking those doobies going, oh, man, let's take this places people don't go. And
yeah, the hippies over at Chicago Magazine. Absolutely.
Oh, my God. They are so straight. Chicago Magazine in just so many ways. But there's good news and bad news. So, of course, I'm very happy for Brandon Johnson and J.B. Pritzker that they got on the cover of Chicago Magazine. So congratulations, you two. But once again, Ben Jarofsky and Patrick Jarofsky Whalen were left off the list. And I think this is an outrage that's been going on.
We don't
on.
Know that. It's not out yet, Ben.
Valid point.
You were going to ask who's on the list, I'm pretty sure. And I say, well, we only have 48 because there's you and me. 46 because JB and Brandon.
Okay.
And then it's just city council, I guess, right? That's it.
Yeah. You just put the rest of the city council there. I could just imagine what that, well, whatever. Anyway, how you measure. Who runs Chicago? What a concept. You know, I'm going to take a look at that list, Chicago Magazine, and determine if anyone who actually runs Chicago is on the list. Because again, this gets into some issues that we'll be talking about, like who actually runs Chicago. But anyway, so that's the image that is on the cover of Chicago Magazine. And when they, I guess they're pretty savvy little operation, huh, Pat? They're putting the image out of the cover before they put the article out. What's the great strategy?
Generate that buzz, man. You gotta farm those clicks, baby.
Well, we're helping, guys. We're helping, okay?
Because we're on the list.
It's quid pro quo.
If we're not, this will never make the air.
That's correct. Chris will cut it. Right, just like that.
Taking the shears to it.
Yeah. Well, we've never made it before, which is an outrage. I was having a conversation before this, which first segment that's going to drop on Monday, and with the great Pomone Rami about Oscars and movies. Guy's a genius, man. And we were talking about the movies that the outrageous that they didn't get nominated, and he was naming, you know, or actors and actresses who didn't get nominated or didn't win the Oscar. So I don't want to give away anything. Okay, I'm just going to tell you that's part of our conversation. And, you know, I kind of feel that way with the annual Who Runs Chicago, because that right now, neither you nor I have ever been on that list. Now, this could be the year, okay? Okay, Pat, this could be our year.
I'm a Bills fan, eternally hopeful.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the great delights at the end of every year is to send Pat an image of the Bills and their latest catastrophe. He's a good sport. All right. Who runs Chicago? And that leads me to this. So this is a riff I've been having great delight with. And get your thoughts on this. So at the start of this week, there were articles and news stories talking about how Brandon Johnson felt compelled to announce that he was ending the city's contract. Oh, God, here we go. With ShotSpotter. Dude, I have such a mental block on that name, as I discussed yesterday. I want to call it Shot Spitter.
Are you talking about Shit Spitter?
Now you screwed me up, dude. You want to mess with a guy with dyslexia? Throw something in there. That's crueler than me sending you Bills memes. That is like, oh no. Oh Lord. How have I survived 6 years of doing this? This is like the exact opposite of what I'm good at. And here I am plowing ahead. Anyway. So ShotSpotter, which is just like, man, it's just some hustle, where every shot fired triggers an alarm at the police department, and they send out the troops. So then there's The World That Exists, as opposed to the world that it should be. And the world that it should be an objective scientific analysis of whether this is worth our time, whether shot spotter is worth our money. And it's a dispassionate analysis. Is it helping us in our objective, which is to reduce crime by catching bad guys who are doing crime and therefore giving them an incentive not to do crime? Because right now the fear is one of the things that drives up crime in Chicago and other cities is that there's no consequences to breaking the law. So ShotSpotter is some hustle that a bunch of tech bros came up with to A, make money, B, sell their gadget, I guess they would proclaim a higher and better purpose in life, and that is to help crime, abet crime. It's really doubtful that it has, and Brandon Johnson ran on a platform to get rid of it, and he was voted by people, he was elected, which suggests that at the very least, a majority of people in Chicago are sympathetic to the notion of getting rid of it. So when he finally kind of sort of got rid of it, we'll get into that in a little while, there was just outrage from mainstream Chicago. He's bowing to his base. Which made me think, Pat, I don't recall ever mayors, Rahm, or Daley having a base. When mainstream Chicago wrote about mayors, Rahm, and Daley, they never said he's bowing to his base. So when Daley sold the parking meters, they never said Mayor Daley is bowing to his base by making the stupidest decision in the history of Chicago to sell something that's worth $10 billion for $1 billion. When Rahm closed the schools, I never heard anyone say he's bowing to his base by making life miserable for people who already or in many cases have a miserable existence. But that's what his base wants. So how come Brandon Johnson has a base and Mayor Rahm and Mayor Daley's like... their base was all of Chicago because we were just grateful that they would be our mayors. So one guy has an isolated segment of the city that's his base that is driving him to do things that real people in Chicago don't want. But these two other guys never had a base. Help me, Patrick Jarofsky Whalen.
You mean besides that he's black, right? Are you saying you want something else? All right. Okay. Let me think. You mean Daley the younger, because I was going to say Daley the elder, you know, his entire rise to power was constructed around bowing to his base. Right. I mean, the idea of patronage is what kept him in people's mouths and in the line of sight throughout his tenure, obviously. Handing that off to, you know, you've talked before about Chicagoans, you know, this tough mayor fallacy that Chicagoans always think they need someone who's a bare knuckle brawler because that's what you need to get it done. Right. And I think that comes from Daley the elder. And then of course the heir, Daley the younger, I think it was just kind of, I think there's a level of engagement that we're not seeing right now. Also because Brandon's black. That, you know, this level of attention being paid to these types of decisions is much more is heightened and therefore more controversial to decisions like this. Bowing to his base by meeting campaign promises is really that's great. That's yeah. Really good stuff. I love it. And I think Rahm is doing a lot of bowing, but that's because, you know, he's the ambassador to Japan. So that's okay. That's a cultural thing. That's a real thing.
Yeah. Patrick will be at Zany's this week and catch him live. Yes. No. I think you hit it on the head. I'm just wondering. Now, I want you to play Sigmund Freud for a moment. Mm. When people write bowing to his base, do you think they're aware of sort of the implications of what they're saying? And this was pretty widespread. You know, the phrase bowing to his base, maybe I can't remember where I read that. I read so many articles about the thought spotter. What's more irrational? The mainstream Chicago's love for Dr. Allison Awadi or their love for ShotSpotter? Like, what a weird, The things you guys love, okay? You make fun of me because I love the Bulls. You're kind of weird yourself, mainstream Chicago. Dr. Allison Irwadi, they like turned her into the second coming of Madame Curie or something.
Well, well, she's brilliant, Ben.
And now ShotSpotter, which they love more than some people love Nintendo. All right.
Helen Keller is probably a more apt metaphor there because they said she didn't listen or see anything that they did. I'm on fire. Help. Call the fire department. Wait, should ShotSpotter know? I don't know. Shit's bitter. My fault. I just think most folks, this is about fear, right? And there were a lot of community meetings with Commander Snelling and Anthony Driver and CCPSA were doing, public meetings down at Father Flager's church, and a lot of folks who were very vocal about not wanting to let go of ShotSpotter were people whose families were affected by gun violence. Yeah. And I just don't think you can't discount them from this conversation. But that comes from a place of, I don't want this to happen again. And what Mayor Johnson campaigned on is this is a fundamental disagreement of what community policing should be. We have to reframe the idea of public safety. And I just think most folks saw, The Dark Knight and they go, I love ShotSpotter, that Morgan Freeman, he really built an amazing product there. And that's not what ShotSpotter is. That's not what ShotSpotter is at all. It sends up a flare. It tells CPD that a noise has occurred. We don't know what kind of noise. We don't know what the noise was, but something loud just happened in this general area. It doesn't say where. It gives the address of where the ShotSpotter itself is. So I'm not going to say it's not a tool, but your buddy Mick Dumke actually tweeted a Block Club article. That Twitter is a social media platform, by the way, used to share news articles. I'm not sure if you're familiar. But he tweeted this Block Club article that says most, 911 calls on South and West sides ignored while rapid response cops make traffic stops instead. So when people should be manning their stations, officers should be manning their stations waiting for these blips to come in from ShotSpotter. In actuality, they're not waiting for those. And that's because the technology is not, it's not doing what people think it does. And that's very different than saying people are wrong to want more surveillance. That's a personal opinion. They're just auditory surveillance. It's not surveillance. It's just an auditory device, which I'm pretty sure was J. Edgar Hoover's argument to Martin Luther King. It's like, Martin, we're not surveilling you. We're just listening to your phone. It's no big deal. People think it does what it doesn't do. And you can talk about it's too expensive and you can talk about its effectiveness and you can talk about the idea of what community policing should be. But behind all that, for me, is that Mayor Johnson campaigned on ending this contract. So I don't know why people are so surprised. And the last thing I want to say, Ben, is that I listened to the special counsel meeting yesterday a little bit. I had it on in the background. I'm from Buffalo, so I just, instead of the game on in the background, I have civics. And Anthony Napolitano, the alderman from the far northwest side, if I'm not mistaken, said that if you keep pushing on arbitration, which was what the meeting was about, and the presser was about ShotSpotter and other things, which I'm sure we'll get to. He said, you're going to see a different kind of strike. So can I turn that question back on you, Ben? When it comes to policing, what is it that you think Alderman Napolitano meant by if you keep pressuring police officers with this idea of the arbitration and pulling the ShotSpotter contract, which he and Nick Sposato, our good friend and neighbor, made the connection on. Alderman Sposato made room in his statement about the arbitration, which they were there to meet about, for we shouldn't cancel the ShotSpotter contract. There's going to be a different kind of strike amongst the police. What does that mean to you? Follow up, is that a threat? Mm-hmm. You're nodding.
Yes, that is a threat. That's okay, Chicago. You're critical of us. See how you do without us. That gets into the concept of whether any kind of criticism of the Chicago Police Department can be tolerated. I guess I'm kind of susceptible to a certain degree on this matter. I have a very similar attitude about the Chicago Teachers Union and teachers. I admit it. So Napolitano, I am sort of to Chicago Teachers Union what you are to the Fraternal Order of Police and your beloved Johnny C., Johnny Catanzara, who is the son that you revolve around. So the notion that you dare to criticize anything that the police do is an outrage in and of itself. And yeah, you keep this up with your criticism and your appeals to your base, you're bowing to your base, then the police will go on strike and it'll be, what's the city in Batman? Gotham City. And their criminals will ruin. And so how you like them apples? So I think that's exactly what he was doing in so many ways. Right now it's illegal for police to go on strike, just so you know.
So what he's saying is you're going to see a different kind of strike. In what, people putting their feet on their desks? This comes from a, I want to lead with the fact that right now, policing is the most dangerous job, period, because there are too many guns in this country. Hello, Kansas City. Like, we know this is a very serious problem. And I don't mean to say that officers all have their heads up their asses because they're concerned about the idea of arbitration or shot spotter. What they're trying to do is make their jobs safer. It is a dangerous job. I understand that. But to make a statement like that, when you're charged with public safety, and to say that we're going to basically stop enforcing the law because we don't like the way the public discourse is going, is very troublesome to me. Troublesome.
They're playing the ultimate card they have. Look, I mean, you talk about how dangerous it is to be a police officer. So again, going back to my original statement, if we're being dispassionate, if we're being analytical, if we're following logic, if we're being like scientists in a laboratory, just saw the lessons in chemistry, read the book, and it's all about the scientific method. So if we're being as analytical as we can, you could make a very strong, compelling argument. Let me get sure I get it right. Shot spotter, which is essentially a computer program that some tech bro came up with, is endangering police officers. You can make that argument because you're sending officers flying to a general location. They don't really know what they're going to be seeing there. They don't know what exactly they're responding to. They're on edge. It's a tough job, to put it mildly, anyway. So now the adrenaline's pumping. The fear is going strong. You got that gun. You don't want to be shot because, yes, we all know there's too many guns in society. So there's a good chance that on the other end, you're going to meet someone with a gun. On the other hand, you might not meet anybody at all. It could have been a car backfiring. We don't know.
Or an acorn falling on a cruiser. Did you see the video of that?
Yes, it's unbelievable.
Unbelievable. And so this, again, I mean, what you just said is indicative of this larger campaign idea that got Mayor Johnson elected, which is the idea of community policing versus surveillance makes officers safer, integrates them more into their community, makes them more familiar with their surroundings, makes residents of that community more familiar with the officer, more likely to cooperate with them when things like this would occur. Which way, Western man? More surveillance or more community policing? And when he's getting raked over the coals in front of the press yesterday, I mean, he was,
We'll get into that. We'll get into that one. That's just like, again, there's the spectacle of issues or there's the examination of issues. You mentioned the legendary Mick Dumke, who's a lifelong practitioner of dispassionate journalism, which is so funny that we were partners for so long at the Reader and on First Tuesday, because I'm like bouncing off of walls, you know, this is an outrage. And Mick is calm and cool and dispassionate.
Life's about balance, baby.
Yeah. And I always said we were like Lennon and McCarthy, and I was Lennon, he was McCartney. He always gets mad because everybody knows John Lennon is cooler than McCartney. You want to see Mick get mad? Tell him that Ben's Lennon and he's McCartney. Oh, I'm John Lennon too. but I called Mick the other day and I picked his brain. I do that all the time. And then like 90% of the times I just steal his ideas and look really smart. He didn't get any credit. Sorry, Mick. That's a tough world out there. But he was the one who told me, he goes, Ben, this is a proxy war. That's hold on. Got to look at my cheat sheet. Scott Spotter. by the way, you type that in. I'm just telling you, ladies and gentlemen, if you type that into your like phone to send a text to Pat Whalen or Mick Dumke about what you want to talk to them about, your phone will spell it shot shitter, okay? Because the phone doesn't recognize spotter as a word.
That's right? A liberal conspiracy. That's the left. That's woke technology infiltrating Silicon Valley and your phone, America. Wake up.
It's an analogy. Let's go poetic here. It's not a metaphor of ShotSpotter itself. In other words, it doesn't exist. It's a made-up thing. And so it just tells you, it's the computer telling you what to do. And you don't even know if the computer's right. So I want to type ShotSpotter. The computer says, oh, no. I am a computer. This word is not in my dictionary. I'm turning it into shot shitter. No, what? That's not in your dictionary either, by the way. And so conversely, it just says, oh, there was a loud noise here. We're going to send you. You have to have to where the loud noise was. Anyway, so
I sent the shooters to wait around for the cops to show up after they fire the gun. I just think that's polite. That's very nice. That's good that they do that.
Yeah. So you know what? You should have hearings on this. You should have pros and cons on this. You should have allow Anthony not Napolitano. Boy, I bridged Anthony Napolitano and Nick Spezzato into one person. And they get to ask questions. And you can allow some lefties to ask them questions, examine them as well. And then you, the people, come to a conclusion. But it's just the way the mainstreams respond. There's just something symbolic about this issue, and it doesn't fit their worldview. And so everybody who's against it is just sort of lumped together, Pat, as like this mindless base, this mindless collection of ideologues.
That wants crime and anarchy.
Yes. Exactly. That wants crime. So again, I put to you, mainstreams, what was the base that Mayor Daley was appealing to when he sold the parking meters that are worth $10 billion for $1 billion? Please explain. If this is Brandon Johnson appealing to his base, bowing to his base, what base was Mayor Daley bowing to when he sold the parking meters? What base was Rahm bowing to when he closed the schools and the clinics? Think, pause, and reflect in your existence, mainstream media. All right. Let's get, since you mentioned it, great moments and ducking and dodging. Brandon Johnson at yesterday's press conference. So here's the contradiction here. He can make an argument for getting rid of the ShotSpotter contract just based on what Patrick was saying. At the same time, he realizes that he's going to get excoriated by the mainstream media because they love ShotSpotter for reasons I'm not quite sure why, just like they love Dr. Awadi for reasons I'm not quite sure why. And so he also knows, I think, Pat, that the Democratic Party, National Party, which is having its convention in Chicago, just wants...
They are? Oh, my God.
Breaking news.
Holy smokes.
just stick here, boy. You'll hear a lot of things. By the way, the Chicago Bears won the Super Bowl in 1986. Whoa, breaking news.
I can't wait to meet Kennedy. That's all. But please continue.
We'll get to Kennedy. So it's a contradiction. There's an inconsistency here. He wants to do two things at once. He wants to bow to his base. He wants to reassure the Democrats by playing to their prejudices and illogic about shot spotter. The media, you know, they're pretty, I mean, they can see that. All right. They're not dumb. Never said that. They're way better spellers than I am. That's for sure. So they see the inconsistency and they're putting the spotlight on it. And I appreciate them for doing it. Because it gives Brandon Johnson an opportunity to say what he believes. Instead, not wanting to offend either side, wanting his base to think that he's bowing to them, he's saying, I'm getting rid of shot spotter. At the same time, he wants to reassure the Dems that he feels their pain. So he's just saying, I'm keeping it around. And so he had to face the press corps yesterday, and they were grilling him. Hilarious. They were grilling him, and they couldn't get him to admit that there's an inconsistency. He couldn't say that. He couldn't say, like I said, look, guys, I got to appease your readers, like the people who read the trash you write. I got to take care of them. And at the same time, I got to take care of the people who voted for me. That's what I'm doing. Yes, it's inconsistent. Yes, it's illogical. But you guys are bowing down to a tech god. You don't even know if it's accurate. Why is that any more illogical than what you're doing? Please explain that to me. I would have loved if he had said that instead, ducking, dodging, dancing. So it was hilarious. What did you think would happen if suddenly Brandon Johnson was honest about what he was doing? With play to both sides strategy behind shot spotter.
Play to both sides. So play to his base as well as the readers who think that it's making them safer.
Yes.
I didn't hear any of this type of controversy when he removed the ghost vehicles, you know, the empty cop cars that had their lights flashing all night long on Michigan Avenue. They removed those recently. And I didn't hear people saying, why are you removing this deterrent? This is, you can't do that. You know, I just wasn't hearing that type of outrage. But what I did hear is that he's been clear from the very beginning. Because he said that probably 8 times yesterday when he was asked all these questions about shots about it. He said, I have been clear from the very beginning. And they're like, about what?
I know.
We don't get it. Yesterday was like it. Watching the mayor was like watching someone try to explain to a dog what the color green is. You know, they just can't see it. They're not built to take that in. And I don't think he said campaign promise. And I think he didn't say that because I don't think he had to. I think people were more interested in the meeting with the county and the governor than they were about ShotSpotter yesterday. They were trying to say, is ShotSpotter going to end tomorrow? And he was like, I've been clear from the very beginning, you know.
Yeah, I've been clear from the very beginning. What response is that I'm completely unclear. It's hilarious because again, this is what reporters are good at. You know, a certain type of reporter. I'm not that good at it. So I'm not every reporter is good at it. But I watch.
When did you stop beating your wife?
I am not going to touch that question because you nailed me. You proved my point.
Have you been clear from the very beginning?
Yeah, I've been clear from the very beginning that it's hilarious. And then what he follows is something that is not in any way remotely clear. Oh, my Lord, that is hilarious. I've been clear, but it is like a Mark Norman bit. It is like a Mark Norman bit. I mean, life is like, but here's the thing about the media.
Comedy, politics.
Here's the thing about the media, man. every movie, I'm of this, my wife and I, we just crack up. We're watching a movie or a TV show, what have you. Whenever they get to the meeting, media, it's shrieking horde, impatient, like stunted growth, adolescent stunted adults, badgering people, belting out their questions that are just exactly like the question you had. When did you stop beating your wife? Sure, when did you stop beating your wife? As this guy is or woman is walking through them. You've seen that a million times in movies. They make the media look so bad. You know what I'm saying? And that kind of the game that if you're in the media, you're reduced to that. Because they treat us all to a certain degree like idiots. They withhold information for them. They're not honest. They're not, quote unquote, transparent. And so you're reduced to that.
I make a connection between, you know, I thought it was, you asked about, you know, who was Daly's base, who was ROM base when they sold these public assets for, you know, basically both were public assets that belonged to the city and the people in it. And they were sold for a price that was undervalued. Public education and parking spaces and streets in general. I could go on, but I don't have to with you. But I thought it was interesting that advocates for ending the contract to ShotSpotter were touting a graph of the share price of the company of ShotSpotter, which I think is just indicative of everything you're talking about, including the media. You know, it's about money. The Tribune is still on strike right now. They're ramping up their striking activities, and they had videos all over the internet today asking each individual, you know, Caroline Kay, Ray Long, everybody was asked, why are you going to ramp up the strike basically and continue this? And it's about money. It's about selling. It's about clicks, shares, selling papers, public assets. It doesn't matter. It's all the same thing. And it dilutes the conversation. It dilutes the conversation because we can't talk about things that we disagree with anymore. And that goes from public officials to Joe Blow on the street.
Yeah, by the way, that is a great point. Why would anyone in the media think that anyone in Chicago would care about this, the share price of, hold on, let me make sure, ShotSpotter stock? You know, why would nobody, unless you own shares of that stock, you don't care at all. If you think about it, trying to be, again, as objective as you can, your question that you should be asking is this a useful tool in a very serious mission, which is to reduce crime in Chicago and hold people accountable for breaking the law? Is it a useful tool or is it just another contract?
Does it make you safer or does it make you feel safer?
Yeah, exactly.
And when we see these op-ed pieces saying, I don't feel safe anymore, but all the graphs are going down for violent crime. Where are people meeting in this conversation? They're not, because they can't. We have nowhere to do it anymore.
So what the great McDumkey was getting at with his issue that it's a proxy war is that it symbolizes larger attitudes in the general cultural war over policing. And so if you're Anthony Napolitano or Nick Sposato, your favorite alderman, Raymond Lopez, then it's just, actually, Nick Sposato is your favorite alderman.
I have a lot of favorite alders. My favorite alder is Tony Preckwinkle.
Oh my God, you're going back in time. We'll get to that. We'll get to
that. Student of history, Ben. Please continue.
Hold your thoughts on that point. Then it's just like, you know, like it's a police related matter. I'm for it. It's critical of the police. I'm for it. And so that's what that was Mick's point. I go, oh, that's a good point, Mick. I'm going to steal it and not give you any credit.
You did give him credit, first of all. But did you catch Franz Spielman's show yesterday? Do you know who the guest was on the new episode that dropped?
Yes. What do I win if I tell you the answer?
An omelet at your favorite breakfast place.
Oh, my God. Eddie Johnson.
Damn it.
Mm-mm-mm. Early morning delight. Get ready. You know, I once a week I go there and I woof the omelet, the skillet, whatever. It's a great place.
I'll sacrifice my pride to support public businesses.
Yes. Matt Martin. When are you going to start promoting that? All right. It's in the 47th Ward. It's the best breakfast restaurant in the 47th Ward. Get going, Alderman Martin. Anyway, so I stole blatantly from Mick. I can't remember where I was going with that. And so I'll just move on.
Police issues. You're either pro-police or anti-police. You're either defund the police or back the blue. You know, like there's no middle.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly the point.
And that's not fair because I'm in the middle.
Well, I have a lot of reservations ShotSpotter and technology in general on this front. And I just think our love for technology sometimes, it's kind of a weird worship. I remember when Uber and Lyft first became popular, and millennials and boomers who love gadgetry, of millennialistic gadgetry, because maybe it makes them feel young, you know, or telling me about regaling me with this. And it was the same boomers. Oh my God, here we go. The same boomers and Gen Xers who, when Netflix came out, went back in the day to pouch Netflix. Are you old enough to remember that, when the envelopes at Netflix?
Oh yeah.
Which drove out, destroyed video stores.
Yeah, Blockbuster.
Blockbuster destroyed Billy Bob's Video. Netflix destroyed Blockbuster, and streaming ultimately destroyed Netflix. And in each instant, there was some baby boomer somewhere telling me that you gotta stay modern, Ben. You gotta be updated. You have to have every freaking gadget in the world. It's like, dude, does this keep you young? Does this make you feel young? You know what I'm saying? Is this what copes with the uncertainty of getting old? It's like embracing. So all you did was drive out one industry for the other. But so they have a love for technology. And so they believe in capitalism, which gets to the Tribune. If you're a reporter for the Tribune, how can you have any kind of belief in capitalism? Please explain that to me, Mr. Whalen. Go.
What's the question? I'm sorry, I was distracted because a ruling was just handed down in the New York fraud case of former President Donald Trump.
You're lying. Is that true?
Swear to God.
Well, that's one of my favorite Four Seasons songs, swear to God. Wait, time out. What was the ruling?
You going to guess for an omelet, or I'm just going to tell you? Trump ordered to pay $354 million in New York fraud case.
You're lying. $354 million? Dang. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, he's holding up his phone to the camera. The reflection, I know it's an ad for pornography. I have no idea what he just showed me. Wow, that's breaking news.
I saw it on the BBC. Oh, wait, wrong BBC. That's a joke.
That's smart, Norman. Wow, $354 million. Let me look.
So,
right. You're not kidding. And barred him from running his company for 3 years after finding him. All right. That's all we're going to discuss now, although I could immediately make that transition. No, the question to you is, how could any Tribune reporter or any employee of the Tribune be a supporter of capitalism if they watch how capitalism has absolutely annihilated their newspaper and our industry? It's ravaged it.
You know, I am a huge closeted geek. And I was watching an interview from the 80s with Daniel Shore. You remember Daniel Shore, Ben?
Yes.
Very Daniel nice. Shore, NPR. So when I came up, my dad would play NPR to and from, daycare. Being young enough where I'm not going to school, I'm going to daycare, and listening to Daniel Shore. And he would always give these talks typically, I think, on Fridays. And he would give all these stories that happened throughout the week, and he would weave this amazing thread between all of them. You know, basically coalescing, you know, the state of the union, if you will, you know, of American culture and the world sometimes in general. It was just amazing stuff and enamored me to the idea of journalism. And in this interview I was watching, he was asked about, because he came up under Murrow, and, you know, was Murrow and Smiley and all these people back in the day when, you know, journalism was up against, you know, McCarthy. You were talking about McCartney, but I thought you meant McCarthy earlier. And, you know, what a time when journalism proved itself as, you know, as combating, you know, the fervor that politics could bring to the populace in general. And I think that if anyone hangs on to the idea of journalism of the truth, being able to convince people, I don't think that's necessarily wrong. But I think the question is, at what point do you say it's been co-opted?
Yeah.
You know, I'm beating the drum about, you know, a third space where people can speak in a way that is still respectful, and they can exchange ideas that they disagree with heavily on from their own personal experiences, not from feeling, not from being told secondhand, but from their actual lived experience. And we just don't have that anymore because it's been bought. It's been bought and paid for. And so if anyone is out there just trying to sell papers for the idea of selling papers, I don't think that's a thing. I think the idea is they want to create comfort for themselves through a living. And journalism is an honest living. You still got the McDumkeys of the world out there who aren't interested in spin. They want to know what the heart of the matter is. And when you're spinning your wheels, just trying to stay afloat. I mean, I think Ray Long was saying he hasn't had a raise in 20 years. Mm-hmm. What is that about? That man is a treasure. I mean, Chicago is blessed with the amount of excellent journalists that we have, and they're simply not compensated for their work. And it's because their work is undervalued.
Yeah.
And, you know, you could say that, you know, some folks who are like buying these types of outlets, because what happens? A big outlet out west gets bought. Everybody gets laid off. They sell it for parts. You know, this keeps happening, and it keeps happening to a degree where I have to wonder if it's not part of the plan. And so I don't know. I don't want to take my hat off because it'll show how much tinfoil I have underneath. But I don't think that answers your question either.
No, but you're getting at the heart of it. I mean, I'm on a tangent on the Tribune. There were so many problems with the Tribune that have nothing to do with this particular issue. The point of view, you talk about a base. Like, what was the Tribune's base when they wrote the stupid shit they wrote throughout the 60s that were terrifying white people about black people? What was that all about? What was their base? You know? But I think the troubles of the Tribune, the ravages of capitalism go back to when Sam Zell try to buy it and use all kinds of exploit all kinds of tax dodges to do so, take money from the employees and use it to part of the acquisition fee, and he did it with this kind of arrogant smile on his face, like,
well, I'm gonna be kill or be killed, dog eat dog. Yes,
exactly. He goes, I'm gonna be rich no matter what. You're the ones who are really a threat. And like, like, how could anybody think that was like a public service in any remote way? Like, he was openly gloating about how he was just going to make a fortune or potentially make a fortune by taking advantage of like tax laws, exploiting loopholes in tax laws. And of course it failed colossally. And then one thing has led to the other, where this hedge fund, these vultures have purchased it so they can strip the parts and sell each individual part for a profit. They don't care about Ray Long or they don't care about Gregory Pratt, you know, and
young up-and-comers. There's a lot of young people at the Tribune who are making serious moves lately, and that gives me a degree of hope, but they're not being compensated well for their work.
So I'm saying, does the base that revere and idolize Scott Spotter, is that the same base that really appreciates a young youngster, for me, a 30-year-old who's dedicating his or her life to a civic important duty like journalism to be the next McDumkey? No, I don't think that base cares about Ray Long, Gregory Pratt, or anyone at the Tribune. So why don't you look in the mirror, that base, okay? base.
I also think there's a degree to this, Ben, that, you know, we're cavemen who have the internet. You know, our brains are simply not built to deal with the amount of information that we have access to on a daily basis. And we've talked about this in relation to Twitter before. I mean, you and I just said that the guy who's going to secure the Republican nomination for president has been found guilty of fraud and will pay over $350 million. And then we said, okay, what else is going on? We just changed the subject.
I mean, no, it's wild.
It's nothing.
Well, because he's also been convicted of sexual assault. After a while, like, what's worse? The sexual assault case that resulted in an $89 million judgment, or the business fraud case, which is a $350 million judgment, which is on the eve of the political corruption case where he's paying off a porn star. Okay, so she wouldn't go public with her declaration of why that he was screwing her. By the way, while they make a big deal of Fonnie Willis, her sex life down in Georgia, to sort of divert attention from him trying to have a coup. So you could see why with this guy, he kind of changed the whole rules.
Worse? Don't make me choose. I love all my children equally.
Yeah, that is. By the way, I just want to point out before we leave this one, I'm sure CBS was making money off of Edward R. Murrow. So talk about capitalism.
Oh yeah,
they were making money.
They made him do like the Liberace interview and all that. You know what I mean? Like they were cashing in. They're like, people love this guy. Let's make him, turn the wheel a little bit for the sponsors. And that's what, you know, when I'm watching these old episodes of TV, they break for commercials, and the commercial breaks are 30 seconds long. Wow. And this is coming from a guy who makes some money off commercials, but I'm just saying, you know, there's a balance that we can strike.
Okay, I will now do my Pat Whalen imitation from one of his greatest, perhaps his greatest hit, his greatest commercial hit. And I say this as a devotee. I love Patrick Jarofsky Whalen. Here we go. Who what?
Who did what? Did you watch the Super Bowl? Did you see my new one?
I put your questions in order with an A and a B. A, yes. B, I'm not sure.
My commercial played on Sunday. I told you I booked an old National Bank commercial I was on. I was at a party and someone was like, so are you still acting anymore? And then someone comes out of the living room and said, were you just on a commercial? Capital. Talk about loving capitalism.
My ladies and gentlemen, if you could see me, I'm so impressed by that, which is just the contradictions of me railing against capitalism, and yet my friend got this national commercial. I'm like, my mouth fell open. I'm so impressed by that and so proud of you.
In my defense, it's a regional bank, so you know, I'm supporting small business.
Who cares? He's probably made more money than I do in a year on that commercial. So guess who's paying when we go to for that omelet?
Why I was willing to bet you, because I can afford it. I can afford two omelets.
I'm trying to think, who paid the last time?
That was you.
Was
you insisted.
Was it?
So
was
I get the next one.
Yeah. Was that the one where the guy made the joke? Was that?
Extra tomatoes, extra mushrooms.
Oh my God, that was hilarious! Ladies and gentlemen, we're having too much fun here. All right. So back to the press conference with Mayor Johnson and the media horde yelling at him, and that's horde, not whore. Okay. So get out of the gutter. All right. So yes,
is that a commercial actor joke? I'm sorry, please continue. Yeah.
So I was, I'm staying with my reportorial brothers and sisters with their frustration in trying to pin Brandon Johnson down to a statement that would actually parse. Okay, so yes, you guys were on to something. He was ducking and dodging, which is one of our favorite topics on the Ben Jarofsky Show, and I like to think of myself as an expert on the art of ducking and dodging. And as such, we have the, you talk about Chicago Magazine, who runs Chicago, who ducks and dodges the best. Okay. I would say number one is Governor Pritzker, the master. We call him JB Travolta on this show because he is so smooth. Just so smooth. Sometimes you call him Sugar Ray Travolta because Sugar Ray was quick on his feet. He could avoid punches. I remember when JB wanted brilliantly avoided answering the tax rate question, which reporters were like, what's the rate going to be? As the state of Illinois was like thinking about something so shocking and revolutionary that we would have progressive rates on our taxes so that poor people wouldn't pay more of a share of their income, which they could less afford to give up than rich people. Whoa, what a radical. Hey, media, what base were you bowing to when you made such a big deal about the tax rate? What base were you bowing to? Okay, anyway, so I thought he's the master number one. At the other end of the spectrum, the one I think is the absolute worst at it because she's so blatantly obvious that she's doing it and doing it with utter contempt for the person to ask a question is, of course, no doubt everybody agrees with me in this one, a president, Tony Preckwin of Cook County. If you ask her a question she doesn't want to answer, she will literally just answer some other question. Just absolutely. And it's not even a smooth transition. She's not Sugar Ray, you know, Pritzker dancing and dodging. He's really good at, like, who? Repeat what you ask and then attach it to something else. And then the next thing you know, you're talking about that something else and you don't realize until later that, oh, wait a minute. He never answered the first. Tony Preck will be like, you know, you ask her, hey, is it sky blue today? And she'll go, I love the Cubs. Joe Madden. What a great man. Wait, what? Huh? Who? So, okay. Where do you rank Brandon Johnson on that list of Ducker and Dodgers?
I mean, this is tough. You're not going to like how I duck and dodge this. But I always think of, when it comes to this type of stuff, look, I want transparency from public officials, but if we could legislate in public, we wouldn't have back rooms. Right. So I always think of, like, during congressional deals on those damn Sunday shows, they're always like, all right, so where are you at with this? And they're like, I'm not going to negotiate in public.
You see?
So,
dodge.
How much of getting his agenda done can he? I mean, this is what you talked about appealing to, like, two different groups. And that's what he has to do. And so can you? I don't know if a direct answer can be given in that type of situation. I still don't know what happened. I still don't know if in that meeting he agreed to close that $70 million gap, that he would go to city council and that he would get that money. Because right now, if you ask Marianne Ahern, she's saying that he promised in that meeting to do it. And he got up there yesterday and said, were you in the meeting? So I don't know. I don't know if he's ducking and dodging, because what he was saying was, it's not just about money. It's also about beds. So I went, because the idea that came out after the meeting and after the press release yesterday that said the state and the county are going to do this much. And Preckwinkel had a quote, President Preckwinkel had a quote in your beloved Bright One today that said she's excited to work alongside the state in this joint funding initiative. So she didn't say we're waiting around for a bag of $70 million from the city. She didn't say that. And so I think what he was trying to say yesterday is that they're going to give $70 million of value.
Yeah,
I don't know. But this, again, this cover of the Chicago Magazine, you know, no offense to Chicago Magazine. I mean, you're talking about churning the waters. I mean, give me a break. That's the most divisive. This whole thing, everyone wants to know what's up with JB and Johnson. Why do they hate each other? You've worked at places. You've had coworkers, Ben. Do you have to like everyone you work with? Do you have to go golfing every weekend? You got to get a beer after work every day? No. But if you're all heading in the same direction,
yeah,
and trying to accomplish the same thing, even if you butt heads, you still have the same goal. And this is, it's just, again, people don't want resolution. They want conflict.
Yeah.
People weren't talking about the fact that Smirnoff, the guy who threw Biden under the bus with the Hunter thing yesterday, they weren't talking about the FBI said, oh, by the way, he lied about everything.
Yeah.
They were talking about the prosecutor who was, what, sleeping with the other guy while Trump's on trial?
Yeah.
What's more fun? What's more exciting?
By the way, so that was a great riff. I thoroughly enjoyed it. And as a result of a riff, I'm going to add to my list. I think number two on the ducking and dodging list is Patrick J.
Yes, that was my goal.
That was brilliant.
The Chicago Magazine list, I'm going to make this one.
Because the question was, who is on the list? And the answer, I don't know what, it was a brilliant choreographed excursion.
It was not choreographed.
No, true. It was total improv, ladies and gentlemen. I could tell you, I was watching him do it. I was in utter awe. I'm like, wow, this guy's good. This guy is good. I'm impressed. I forgot what my question was.
Brought to you by Old National Bank.
What? Who? Huh? I'm going to go look at that commercial because I don't remember it. I may have been out eating a piece of chicken when it aired. I'm a little embarrassed to admit. So I think that Brandon Johnson is more is not as good at this as J.B. Pritzker, because his ways of not answering the question just bring more attention to the fact that he's not answering the question. Although now that I say that, so did J.B. So, you know, I think he and J.B. are kind of in the same boat, which is and they're each using the other with their fight. So, like, I saw this, Pat, firsthand, when out of nowhere, when all the people that my beloved lefties in the city of Chicago could be mad at with the way the quote-unquote migrant crisis is handled, it's not even a crisis, they picked on JB. Why? Because it diverted attention from Brandon Johnson. So it worked to their advantage to use JB Pritzker as a straw man enemy. And so lefties play this game too. Similarly, JB Pritzker is trying to distance himself from lefties for all kinds of reasons. The ceasefire is one. So it's to his advantage to exploit this notion that there's a rift between the two. And then, of course, then they'd have the mixed thing. They mix all the matter. Well, we may disagree on this or that, but we really get along behind the scenes. So they have their political reasons for sort of distancing one themselves from each other. The one with Lori Lightfoot, I couldn't understand that the rift between Pritzker and Lori Lightfoot, because they were from the same centrist movement. So that one baffled me. You know what I mean? I think that was just more the peculiarities of the personalities. Your thoughts, young man?
I mean, I would agree. I think you got to ask your boy Pratt, but I think he might have a little more insight on that one. But I think what's, first of all, the tension's going to sell papers. There's a reason it's the goddamn cover of Chicago Magazine. They know that this is on everybody's mind and that it's very exciting to think about these very powerful people who are at odds and vying for some prize of being the one to take care of the migrants. And I would just like to remind everyone that it's a federal fucking border that these people are crossing to get here, that they aren't all from Central America or South America, that there are plenty of people from China and Asia who are also crossing that border. So there are people from all over the world trying to come here for how great a standard of living that we have, and that it is a federal thing, and that we have a big summer ahead of us. So I think all of these things are conspiring to create this thing where no one wants to pay for it. That's what this is. No one wants to pay for it. We know that this is going to cost a goddamn fortune, and no one wants to fork over the money. I was talking to someone yesterday from the suburbs who said, well, what are we doing about this? You know, what's the city doing about this? And I, what do you mean? What is the city doing about this? So, well, they got to stop it. And I said, stop what? And they said, well, they got to stop the migrants from crossing the border. And I said, the federal border at the south of the country? And they're like, yeah. And I said, first of all, I don't know what the mayor of Chicago is supposed to do about that, or the governor of Illinois for that matter, besides advocate behind the scenes, which I hear is happening. It's very much a duck situation where everything's very placid up top and they're kicking away underneath and trying to get some federal attention and money brought to this. And I think that goes for our entire delegation representing us in D.C., but on top of that, it's not that people are crossing the border. It's that they're being put on buses because they are told that they will have shelter, food, clothing, and a job waiting for them when they get here.
Yeah.
And I think we don't talk enough about Greg Abbott and all this. This guy is low. He's advocating for his National Guard to put up razor wire at a federal border, flaunting a blatant disregard for the Supreme Court and the laws of this country. And everybody wonders why people don't trust institutions anymore.
Yeah.
Wow. But I'm glad it's selling papers.
That is another great riff. And I'm going to avoid responding because I have a response because we're almost out of the show and we have to move on to other topics.
Oh, come on. No. Well, one more time.
All right. So here's what I want to do before we close with Baby Bobby. So we've been talking about ducking and dodging. As folks who were regular listeners to When Pat Comes On, he's a comedian and pretty good impressionist. So here we go. I want to do your impression of Alderman Nick Sposato ducking and dodging a question. Okay. So imagine if Nick Sposato were Mayor Sposato and the press corps was badgering him like yesterday, or badgering Brandon Johnson. And we all saw how Brandon Johnson just like went on a loop and just started repeating himself over and over again. It was actually kind of humorous. He goes, "What question? I answered that question." "No, you didn't." "Yeah, I answered that question. Next question." God damn, man. I actually got to say, that was pretty good. I'll put him on the list right behind. Pritzker's number one. Brandon Johnson's number two. I guess, yeah. Brandon, you keep working, Mayor Johnson. You're going to beat Pritzker. So, all right, here you go. Nick Sposato, ducking and dodging a tough question from the media of Chicago. Go.
I thank you for that question. You're always really good. And you always ask a good questions. I really like the way you ask them. And, you know, I always answer straight away. So you can always ask me. I tell everybody you can ask me whatever you want. I'm always going to tell you what the answer is. I think I've been clear from the very beginning. I think that I've been pretty straight with you. I think I told you how it is. And so while I do appreciate the questions, I got to tell you, I've been very clear about what all that is. It depends on what your definition of is. I think he's a run out the clock kind of guy. That's what I think.
He's a run out the clock. That's it. Mayor Sposato has no more. Then they always bring in the press.
Thank you.
Yeah. That person, the role of that person in the assembly, you know what I mean? The little arrogance and contempt that person has. They're showing the boss how they can't stand the reporters any more than them. And meanwhile, individually, they're having off-the-record conversations. You got to know this. They're having their off-the-record conversations where they just, you know. I've tried to do that with people in the job. I want to be a player, man. Call me and feed me. Like, you know, I'm a plant. Pour water on me. Nah, they won't even do it, man. That's cold. But that was a good conversation. But I had to add the press. That's it. Enough questions. Final question. We'll let Billy Bob ask the question. They always give that final question to Billy Bob or whatever.
One more.
Yeah, one more question. Yeah, one more question. All right, that was very well done. And by the way, totally improv. All right, we'll close with there's so many national news stuff. Baby Bobby. Wow. Baby Bobby. What a piece of work that guy is. Of course, that's Robert Kennedy Jr., he Pat was not the only person who took advantage of commercials in the Super Bowl on Sunday. Baby Bobby did a commercial in which they took an old John F. Kennedy commercial.
The ad.
They took the ad, right. And they imposed, it's like AI to the nth degree, Baby Bobby's picture where John Kennedy's picture was. To make you think, well, what a contemptuous attitude toward baby boomers. Like, you guys are so brain dead. You're just going to vote for this guy because his last name's Kennedy. You'll think, isn't that the Kennedy? I'm voting for him. They think you're idiots, voters. And by the way, I can understand why. Look at your mayors you've elected daily and wrong. Your thoughts about this young man? I mean, is there, like, do you think that they were successful in appealing? Like, were there actual voters out there who saw that travesty, that joke, and walked away going, you know, I like that man. By the way, that whole commercial was a duck and a dodge, avoiding every issue in the campaign and avoiding completely the reality of who Baby Bobby is, a vaccine denier, freaking nutcase, totally avoids that. So it's Actually, that's a better Ducker and Dodger than JB, Brandon, or Tony, or Nick Sposato. By the way, it was great Ducking and Dodging. So your thoughts as, you know, a man in this realm who does commercials, go.
Unimaginative, outrageously expensive, poorly made. I think it wasn't only offensive to people who pay attention and respect the realm of politics, but also to people who edit videos for a living, because just the image was dragging across the screen instead of seamlessly going with the illustration. So whoever made it did it poorly. They probably spent all their money placing the ad and none to make it. Case in point, all the signs still said, vote Democrat.
Yeah, they
did. What the hell? Are you serious? So it just, you know, to paraphrase a famous quote, you know, I knew John F. Kennedy, and sir, you are no John F. Kennedy. Like, it's just simply, I think, to answer your question about like what impression or what, you know, appeal it made, I don't think anyone walked away from that ad and said, you know what? He's convinced me. Because like you said, he didn't mention anything about issues. This ad literally was just putting in front of the Super Bowl watchers, my name is also Kennedy.
Yes, exactly.
And I just, it's just such a joke. And what's happening, you know, did you watch Succession, Ben?
God, I watched one season, hated every minute of it. But that's
I am not surprised.
Okay.
I am not surprised. Other
show. Well, let's just avoid that conversation for another time, but go ahead.
Well, in one of the future seasons, one of the siblings is attempting to run for president, and one of the other siblings is familiar with politics,
I actually saw this was one of the dumbest. Don't get me started on this one, because that's in the half hour of you and me discussing Succession, you defending it, me attacking it, and their embedded hatred. You talk about the hatred the mainstream media has for the left. This movie hates the left even more. And self-haters, because they're acting like they like the left, but they're just filled with loathing of themselves, and they revere and worship rich people. And I think maybe that's true of the mainstream media, now that I think about it. But anyway, I digress. It's your fault, because you are the one, young Patrick, who threw this up at me. Go ahead.
We could do a half hour on this, because I would encourage you to rewatch it with the mindset that Adam McKay made that show. So take that for what you will. But the point is that one of the siblings is a political consultant, and one of them has his head so far up his own ass he could wave out his own mouth, as I like to say, and he's running for president. And she's basically like, these guys are fleecing you. You have no shot. They're milking you for all your money, period.
Yes.
And he refuses to hear it. And I think that's what's going on with our beloved Kennedy, is he's just like Dean Phillips. He's going to be out a big chunk of change and have nothing to show for it, but some shitty commercials. Pardon my French.
By the way, I give you credit for knowing who Dean Phillips is. That's all I'm going to say. This man follows politics. I'm sure if you can, I said this the other day, I'm not up to this. I said 1 in 100 don't, ordinary people in Chicago cannot tell you who Dean Phillips is. I actually think it's like 1 in 200. If you, sir, you will get a free breakfast at Early Morning Delight.
And how much do you think that cost him? 50 mil?
Wait, what cost the breakfast at Early Morning Delight? No.
No, his campaign. That the fact that 2 people out of 100 know his name.
Yeah. Oh, I get your point. Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah, because he's self-financed. Yeah, you're right. Good point. So I agree with you. It was a totally worthless commercial that just, and then got his siblings and cousins mad at him because it completely smeared his legacy.
He issued a Twitter apology.
While at the same time, he was promoting the commercial on Twitter. Further, listen, the contempt that political strategists and politicians have for the public is overwhelming. And I think that gets at the heart of when the media is outraged, when a politician like Brandon Johnson or J.B. Pritzker is just openly and obviously not answering their questions. I think that's part of it.
I don't mean to push us into overtime here, Ben, but this is interesting because I hear kind of two things that you're saying. One is Brandon refuses to play the game of blame and just say, yeah, well, the state this and that, but will not answer the question for that reason and not throw anyone under the bus. But it's bad that he won't answer the question. Is this the case, sir?
Yes, absolutely. He doesn't want to say the obvious. He doesn't want to say that personally, I feel that this is a waste of money because it's there's not even a record to support it. So you're supporting this is just like an emotion. Okay. And so I don't want to run government that way. On the other hand, he doesn't want to alienate the people who have, who do believe that it's an important, significant contribution to preventing crime and mayhem. Okay. So he's going to avoid taking a direct stand on it. That's what he's doing. And he's, it's completely self-contradictory. It's farcical. The levels to which he will go to avoid taking a stand and avoid alienating one side or another in this debate is funny to watch on one level, and frustrating if you're a daily journalist who has to write a sentence that does parse. Okay. So yes to all that. And Brandon Johnson's attitude embedded in that, I don't really care. I don't care if I'm not giving you a sentence that parses, and I don't care if this is frustrating to you and this upsets you, because I have a different agenda than you do. So you write what the hell you want to write. I'm Brandon Johnson and you're not. And that's essentially what he's saying. That's like LeBron James. You ever see LeBron when they get under his skin about criticism? He goes, every day I wake up and I'm LeBron James. And what are you? He's like, hey, you got a good point there. I'm some broke ass and an addict. That's who I am. But Michael Jordan is still the GOAT, LeBron. Sorry. So, all right. We just took care of baby Bobby and Dean Phillips. Your prediction for what's going to be on the Sunday morning talk shows? Remember, Pat watches them, so the rest of us don't have to go.
Oh, since it's the time is mine, I want to ask Ben, do you know what percent of lake ice is currently present on the surface of Lake Erie, not Lake Michigan?
Oh, lake ice. I didn't, God, wow. I would say 5%.
0%. Whoa. There is no ice on the surface of Lake Erie currently. So when I get all worked up about, discourse in this country and, climate is near and dear to my heart, kind of feels like, someone's got a gun to my head and another person's like, why'd you wear those shoes? They're so impractical. And I'm like, can we focus on the issue at hand, please? Percentage for lake ice on Lake Michigan is 3%, by the way, which is also lower than usual.
Wait. So help me out here. I'm going to embarrassingly show my utter ignorance about geography with this question. So I admit up front, people are going to be making fun of me with this question. Why is it less in Lake Michigan than Lake Erie?
I think Lake Michigan goes way farther north, for one thing. Lake Erie is actually kind of mid to low Lake Michigan in terms of longitude, or is it latitude? I don't know. The average ice cover at this time of year for all of the Great Lakes, which is currently at 4%. Would you like to guess what the average is from 1973 to 2023 at this time of year? So currently 4% of the surface of the Great Lakes is covered with ice. What is the average for 1973 to 2023 of ice coverage on the surface of the Great Lakes?
70%.
41%.
Oh, damn.
So not so quite so high, but,
No, I was just talking about this. Oh my God, it was two baby boomers reminiscing about the days when. Oh my God, this is. They used to, I'm not making this up, Pat. The Park District would flood parks and
do ice skating.
And do ice skating.
Yeah.
Millennials, when the weather gets cold, the water turns to ice, and you can skate on it. Not making this up.
When does the weather get cold, though?
It's true.
When does that happen? In the past.
That is the unfair, because if we really owe millennials and Z a tremendous debt that we even address this as an issue. But all right, be that I couldn't resist it. But anyway, yes, to your point, I remember. No, that's a joke. The idea that you would do that, flood, you know, they would like Linkin Park at the Wavelength Clock Tower. I would remember the guys would come out like, oh no, winter's coming. And I'd see the workers hosing the field and like, you know, me, because I hate winter. So I kind of like, it's weird. I'm a walking contradiction. I kind of like climate change in that. On the other hand, I know this is not good. This is not good. Okay? Even I know it. All right. No, it's not good that Lake Erie is not freezing over in the winter. Not good. All right.
So that's one thing in discourse, you know, not on this show, but in discourse in general, I don't see enough of. Another, I don't know if you saw my secret message on my whiteboard here. I don't know if you heard about Beyonce's new country album that's coming out and causing quite a stir. Did you hear about the radio station that was called in Texas where they requested her new song that just was released?
Yes, and they wouldn't play it.
They wouldn't play it because they play country music. But as you can see here, can you read my little secret message?
Oh, yeah, hold it up to the camera. Can't see it.
Okay, that's not fair. I'm not going to make Ben read it because, listeners, it's backwards on my whiteboard. That's insult to injury. What it says is, black people invented country music.
So true.
Look it up.
Oh, my God. That is so wild. That is so, it's unbelievable.
I love this country. I love discourse. To actually answer your question, that's just me plugging stories I like. Yeah. Jim Clyburn is stepping down from Democratic leadership. He's going to be on Face the Nation. I'm looking forward to that. We also have vice presidential contender, question mark, Tim Scott on Face the Nation. And I, of course, wouldn't be surprised if we saw John Kirby doing a masterful duck and dodge this Sunday as well because of the RAFA initiative that President Biden is trying to gently remind President Biden, President Netanyahu, that he would like to see a strategy behind going into Rafah by the Israeli military. So that I think will be a big point. So Democratic politics, Republican politics, you can't have Lankford on. That's all done. We talked about that last time.
The redhead. No, Netanyahu.
Strawberry blonde.
Probably one of the most important things we could talk about. We can't talk about because we're at the end of the recording, but wow, Netanyahu is truly one of the most despicable politicians I've ever seen. And I've seen a lot. He is like running out the clock in this perverse way by dedicating the slaughter of people in Gaza to a mission that can't possibly be achieved, which is the eradication of the people who are fighting him from that area. And that is not in any way an endorsement of the people of fighting him. It's just an acknowledgement of the reality that exists. If you wage war on people for I don't know how many years, they're going to hate you. And so the only way you're going to get rid of the people who hate you is if you make some concessions as opposed to slaughtering them. And he's going to run it out because he knows, he thinks in his estimation, this will help Donald Trump get reelected and Donald Trump will be more supportive of him. Hey, if I were a talking head on the George Stephanopoulos show, imagine that. It wouldn't work because I'd have to get up too early. That's the problem, Pat. But that's what I say. I do not think Kirby's going to say anything remotely like that. That's my prediction.
No, yeah. No. He's going to say what he's been saying in briefings all week, which is Israel is their own country, and we don't look over their shoulder while they're putting these plans together. But the readout from a phone call with Prime Minister Netanyahu and President Biden, I refer to him as President Netanyahu. It's not the case. President Herzog of Israel, of course. But a direct quote from that readout from the White House is the president also raised the situation in Rafah and reiterated his view that a military operation should not proceed without a credible and executable plan for ensuring the safety of and support for the civilians of Rafah. So more on this story as it develops, I'm sure.
All right. Well, I think you're right on all three fronts. I think they're going to explore Fonnie Willis if for no other reason than they can talk about sex. So that'll, you know, provoke some interest from listeners.
That'll be on Stephanopoulos, I'm sure.
Yeah. And So I definitely think that's the case. And then, oh my God. Well, no, they probably did the Hur report last week, correct? Where Robert Hur said, yeah.
Correct.
That may have died as an issue. I don't think that has legs to last a full week. Yeah.
Not with this ruling out of New York today.
You mean on you're definitely going to talk about Donnie Trump's, the latest ruling against Donnie Trump. But, oh, so you think the Republicans will bring up her saying that Biden is old in order to avoid discussion of Donnie Trump stealing, being $353 million judgment. Yes, that's what you think. So they'll bring up her for that reason.
It's never going to go away. This age thing is just they're going to hammer him on this forever. And it's working. Why would they stop? Like the discourse right now is Biden's old and Trump is Trump. And this is where we're at.
Yeah.
This is where we're at. I saw an interesting quote though. Last week, I forget what show, but someone said it's a little difficult to find a candidate who's 30 years old, but has 50 years of foreign policy experience.
Wow. I'm writing that down. Trump is Trump. That is really good. Did you just come up with that?
I did. Yes.
All right. The big decision I have to make. Do I give you credit? I don't know.
Just credit old National Bank, Ben.
You know, I think I'll give that credit to Mick Dumke. You know, as Mick Dumke once said, Biden is old, but Trump is Trump. Think about it. It's actually a very wise statement.
This is where we're at. We've been stuck here for weeks and we will be stuck here for months.
Yeah. Wow. It says a lot. I think I may write that my next column about that. I Biden is old. Trump is Trump.
I'm a millennial. You always say some millennial told me or some Gen Z. I'm not Gen X. You name me. Okay. I can use the press.
Are you Patrick Jarofsky Whalen?
This is nepotism. It's nepotism.
That's right. I'm naming my non-existent name for sake. all right. Any promotions you want to do? The man is a comedian. The man is a showbiz impresario. The man is an actor. The man is a political strategist. Anything you want to promote, go.
Because we're related, I'll give you an exclusive. It's looking more and more like we're going to have Sherman Dilla Thomas, Maggie Winters of HBO's Righteous Gemstones, and Ronnie Malley, local, very talented musician, for the next lineup of Good Evening with Pat Whalen, Chicago's only late night talk show news alternative, which when people ask me, what is that? I say, we're still trying to figure that out almost 10 years in. So venue details forthcoming. It's kind of a secret thing. It's not really a bar or a venue proper that we've done before. It's a little off the beaten path. So follow us at Best Evening Ever on Twitter. Sorry, Ben, and Instagram. I might put it on Facebook too. Who knows? And I am at The Pat Whalen, which my uncle Pat hates because he was the first The Pat Whalen. But I am at The Pat Whalen on Twitter and Instagram, and it'll keep you updated on the show. Tickets are usually $10. It's a steal for a lineup like that. And the theme of the show, Ben, what does it mean to be a Chicagoan? Forget hot dogs, forget rat holes. All three of these people are born and raised in this city, and I'm trying to get to the bottom of what it all means. So stay tuned for more details.
Definitely. That sounds awesome. By the way, I just want to point out, like I'm an editor, this is what editors will do, the platform of formerly known as Twitter, now known as X.
I'm not playing that game.
I'm with you 100%.
What's the website?
Twitter.com. Come on, editors. Stop it. The Reader did that to me. I'm like, come on, stop. People aren't idiots. Okay.
Don't you stop.
Stop. I know, like every politician thinks that the voters are morons. It's clear they do, but editors, you don't have to do that. They know that Twitter is X and X is Twitter. You don't have to tell them that. I know, like I should have told people who Bobby Kennedy's father was. I realized. I usually do that, but this time, people, if you listen to a Pat Whalen show, you're a junkie. And you know, your political, I got a sense of who listens to it. Well, actually, if you listen to the Ben Jarofsky podcast, you are a political junkie. All right, young man, get back to those phones, wheeling and dealing, like Brandon Johnson. And that, by the way, standing ovation for his Nick Sposato imitate, totally improv'd. standing all, ladies and gentlemen. That was brilliant. Patrick J. Whelan is his name. There's no J in that name. Thank you very much, Pat, for coming on the show. Good sport. Also want to thank producer Chris. He does an outstanding job. And as Nick Spazzato would tell you, hey, producer Chris, give yourself a raise.
Take it out of petty cash.
Yeah, take it out of petty cash there, Chris.
Very good. Take care, everybody.
And remember, spend the weekend catching up on what Ben Jarofsky's been up to. He's got bonus interviews that drop almost every day. So if you missed one, go to chicagoreader.com. You can play catch up whenever you like, whenever you've got time. 3 a.m. If you're up, if you're a night owl, catch up on some Jarofsky. If you want to follow him on Instagram, that's easy, at Benny J Show. And don't forget to like, subscribe, and follow the Ben Jarofsky Show on your favorite streaming and podcasting platforms.